Hey folks, welcome to episode 2 of the Unkempt Podcast with Ashton York. Nice to have you back. Thanks for listening to episode 1. Today's conversation is yet another edition of Thursdays with Quindine. We cheated and recorded it today because he and I have been missing each other the last few weeks. But we had a really fun conversation. Nothing super focused, but also not over the top rambly, I don't think. A lot of really fun and interesting moments, so I hope you enjoy. I'm playing Hotel Utah on February 22nd here in San Francisco. Would love to see some of you there. And if you're listening on Spotify, feel free to like this podcast and maybe even rate it if you'd like. That'd be awesome. What else is going on? I think that's it. I'm going to keep the intro really short. And thanks again for listening. Hope you enjoy the chat.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
All right, January 22nd. This is the Unkempt podcast with Quinn on a Sunday.
On a Sunday.
Throwing you guys for a little loop. You know what I mean?
Nobody cares.
You guys were used to a certain thing, and now for all the fans out there,
for all the
you're
fans,
you're kind of feeling a little thrown off.
For all the thousands of listeners.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. That's just how it is.
Thursdays with Quindine on Sunday. It reminds me of Bill Burr's podcast. How there's like 3 days in this title.
Oh. Dude, is Bill Burr's podcast the one about like people send him letters? I just see these on YouTube a lot. People send him letters and he just kind of talks.
Yeah. He does a lot of his podcast by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. Dude, so have you been? It's been like over a week since we've talked. Over 2 weeks, maybe?
Yeah.
Did we skip 2 Thursdays?
I think we did.
Shit.
We're bad
boys.
Have
you been in that time?
How have I been? Dude, I've been good. I went to Colorado to work on some music, and it was nice to get out of town. I'm working on this documentary thing. Can you kill your dog?
Mm-hmm. It's not mine.
It's not yours. Okay.
No, it's definitely coming from your side.
Oh, it is? The dog barking?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. I thought it was from your side.
Can you just fucking kill your dog?
Everything's been good, man. Working on this documentary thing for Nightmare in Your Arms, and working on more music, and doing the thing. I got home from Colorado and just dived right back into work, and it was such a relaxing time there. And dude, work has kicked my ass this weekend.
Damn.
Like,
yeah.
Friday and Saturday were just a shit show at the restaurant. In a good way, like not a bad shit show, but just so busy.
Yeah.
And dude.
Like, were you fucking up at all?
No. No, I had my head on straight. But it's just a lot. Like, it's a big job, and that's why I only do 4 nights a week there. I couldn't do more if I tried. It's just so much mental and emotional strength, not to mention the physical component of just walking around the same building really fast for 5 hours. But it's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Well, dude, how is Colorado? Like, you said you went there to write?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go with, like, the intention of going to write?
Yeah.
Okay.
So a couple months ago, I have this really close friend of mine of, like, 10 or 15 years. And I was talking to her, and she was, you know, she was opening up to me about her life, and we're pretty honest with one another, and because of the conversation we had, I felt inclined to be like, hey, if you want to do music, you should just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're so talented and you have so much to say. So why not just get some people together and make a record? And she was like, huh, okay. And she told me, I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I laid into her a lot, you know, like, that's not really how our friendship has ever been. It's always like me asking her for advice, you know?
Yeah.
But I was kind of like, what are you doing? Like, just make stuff, you know? And she texted me like 2 months later and was like, hey, are you free from the 14th to the 18th? I'd like to fly you out. I'm ready to make some music. I was like, great. So we did. And
dope.
We only cut 2 songs, and she didn't have anything written beforehand, so everything was from scratch.
Mm.
And it was done at someone's house, and it was very different than the experience I'm accustomed to.
Because,
like, Zach and I, since we were little kids, have just always gone into the studio, and we usually write songs first and then have people play on them, and...
Right.
You know, usually I'm like, I've gone to Greg's studio and had like no idea what I was doing. So I've definitely been like unprepared before, but
you know. Not so much to the point where you don't have a song.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that she was unprepared. That's just how she wanted to do it.
Right. It was intentional.
Yeah, it was intentional. Like she needed her 2 friends to come and help her write stuff, you know? So we did. We got 2 songs down. I think they're cool. I like them a lot. And we'll see what happens. You know, I think she's hoping to release an EP by the summertime. And yeah, I mean, more than making music, it was just like I told myself before I went out there, like, if all I do is just get to see my friends, like, that's going to be great.
It's a success.
Yeah, it's a success. And more than the music, we all connected a lot. And I hadn't seen these people in, like, 2 or 3 years, like, all together. And it was amazing to me, like, how in sync we were. You know, as far as how our minds work and the way we think about things and look at life and even our interests, you know, and we talked a lot about comedy and we talked a lot about philosophy and like spirituality and stuff. And I just felt like I was with my people again, which was really cool. So,
yeah,
it was nice.
Dope.
I actually thought about you. I was like, Quinn would really like this.
Shoot me the invite next time.
Yeah, I'll shoot you an invite for sure, bro. One thing that one of my friends brought up was he was saying, like, I actually don't have a lot of people in my life that I can be totally unfiltered with. Like, most of my friends, even though we love each other and we're really close, I still find myself filtering what I would actually say. Because I know how they'll receive it. And so we thought about it together. Like, I thought, like, who are the people in my life that I could be totally unfiltered with? And I was surprised that, like, there's only a few. And they're not really my best friend. They're not really my partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally, like, I thought of you right away. And I thought of my mother, and I thought of, like, some people that helped get me sober. And that's literally it. Like, I really don't have a lot of people in my life that I could literally just say anything to. without ruffling feathers or not even ruffling feathers, but some people don't even know how to receive what you're saying. So I thought that was an interesting conversation we had.
Yeah.
But who are those people for you, do you think?
Well, definitely you're one of them. And I was thinking part of it, I think part of it is because like, well, I think we started out with a certain level of like, I don't know, detachment to the, from each other. So like whatever you have to say that you think might disappoint me, I'm sure you don't really care. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, or at least didn't in the beginning.
So
and I didn't, you know? So it was like I never, with certain people, I'm, you know, I try to be unfiltered. I make an effort to be unfiltered as much as I can, but I think with certain people, I'm always going to be walking on eggshells a little bit because I don't want them to, I don't want to hurt them, and I don't want them to think of me like I'm a monster or something. Mm-hmm. But I feel, first of all, I feel like with you, I know we're very different, but a lot of our thoughts are pretty similar. And also I think we know how to respect each other's differences. And when it comes to you, I admire the ways that you think differently from me, and I think it makes conversation fun.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same way here. Yeah, it goes both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, it just takes a certain kind of person for me anyways to be, and it's different. Like, there are people, like with you, I feel unfiltered as far as like saying like any sort of thought, but I don't feel quite as unfiltered in the way where I'll act like a, like there are some people who I feel totally comfortable acting like an idiot around, you
right.
know, like acting like a silly goober, goofy goober.
Totally.
And so it's just, yeah, I think you and I converge on some, I don't know what level to call it, but like,
it's the perfect circumstance, basically. We're not too close that, like, there's so much history that I could hurt you or offend you.
Right.
But we're close enough that we could, you know. But it's interesting that what you say about being silly around somebody. And I think that's part of being unfiltered, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if it's one thing to feel like you can just talk to somebody or whatever, but to be who you want to be in any given moment around somebody,
mm-hmm.
I think is kind of what I was thinking of, is like unfiltered. And I feel fine being really silly, you know, like,
yeah.
But then at the same time, it's like, we actually are who we surround ourselves with. So the people we're with do dictate our true selves.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people, I mean, I feel like that's something a lot of people don't get, and it's something also that's a bit hard to express, but like, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm the same with everyone. Like, everywhere I go, I'm the same person. And for, I've never been able to like relate to that thought, because who I am just changes so often depending on what situation I'm in and who I'm around. But I don't think, I no longer think that that makes me like two-faced or something.
Yeah, no, no.
You know, it's just, I have different kinds of chemistry with different people.
Right, and we're super social beings. You
right.
know, it's like,
and we're influenced by whatever we're influenced by. Like, we don't really get to help that. Like, we can't dictate that.
Yeah, I actually think that being socially flexible in that way is a sign of like intelligence and security within yourself. But it's weird because like most people believe that like if you're like a social chameleon, you don't know who you are.
Right.
But I think like the smartest people are the people that can be in any room with anyone and like find common ground really quickly just by reading them. And
yeah,
that's like a super important quality, you know? And like,
yeah,
with this trip, like I found myself like, there were things that I really connected on with the people I was with. And I was talking to Zach about it, and he's good friends with them too. And I was telling him about the process and how it was, you know. And he just flat out, like, admitted to me. He was like, I don't know if I would do very well in that environment, you know. And, like, he really is more... And I'm not saying, like, he's... Because I just said that, like, it's a sign of intelligence that you can be a chameleon. And I don't think he's less intelligent than me at all. But I do
It's a
think
different kind of intelligence, it is. Maybe, like a particular kind.
Yeah, it is. It's a particular kind, and he's very much himself wherever he goes, you know? And, like, the people he's closest to are the people that can meet him where he's at, which I think is really interesting, you know? And so, but we actually talked about that. You know, like, I just basically was like, yeah, I think I'm better in those environments. And he was like, yes. And I was like, it's so funny that we're just, like, addressing that out loud. It just felt very meta and cool.
Yeah. But, yeah. Oh, so, dude, yeah, it's been maybe 2.5 weeks since we spoke.
How have you been?
Me? You know, I've been good. I'm in this weird kind of, like, in between. What do they call those these days? Liminal space.
Like limbo?
Kinda, yeah. Like an in between stage.
You ever seen Toothless with Christy Alley?
No.
Oh, classic.
Is it a special?
No, it's a movie about the Tooth Fairy. Okay. Anyways, keep going.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I'm moving at the end of the month, like, to a new apartment, and,
I'm
excited for it. Yeah, I got it.
Congrats.
I think the last time we spoke, I was kind of, like, touring around trying to find one or something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I got this particular one that I really like. It's got some of it checked the box on a couple of my most important qualities in searching for one. The main one being, like, lots of natural light.
That's big.
Like, there's a lot of apartments in Chicago I'm noticing that are, like, they have a lot of windows, but the windows are, like, 4 inches from a brick wall or something.
Right.
You know? Have you ever seen The Matrix?
I mean, I've seen pieces of it. I've never actually sat down and watched The Matrix.
Oh, dude. It's one of my favorite movies. But anyways, there's this scene where, you know, they're like, quote unquote, in the Matrix, and one of the characters, like, opens a door to try to escape somewhere, and it's just a brick wall, like, right there. And it gives me this really claustrophobic feeling in the movie, but it just also really, really does in real life. And right. So anyways, all that to say, I really like apartments that have windows that look out at trees or, you know, a street or just a big view.
Totally.
And that's what I got here. It's like on a nice street, you know, it's not too busy. It's got a dining room, this one. Like, the apartment I'm in now is just a bedroom, and then it's another room that's, like, a kitchen and living room mix, you know?
Right, yeah.
And so it's nice. It's a nice location, but it's kind of small.
Right.
But this new one, yeah, it's got a separate living room and dining room and bedroom, and then it's got a dining room, which I think I'm going to use mostly as, like, a work-from-home/music space, you know what
Very
I mean?
Very cool, yeah.
And I'm excited because I think I can build a space that's like, that will inspire me to play or create a little bit more.
Yeah. Sometimes you need that, like, exciting change in your life to get, you know, to get a little bit of a push creatively. I mean, but that's exciting, man. That's really cool. I'm glad you got a spot.
Yeah. And then also, my company just got bought out. by this like larger firm. And basically, to me it seems like less, because they're trying to get me and my other coworker on as employees, which they, I think, effectively have at this point. But what it means for me is like probably less security in general. Like we're essentially switching from a W-2 to a 1099. Like we'll be independent contractors. But from the way that they're talking about it and from the numbers that they've shown us, it could mean a lot more money and a lot less work.
Okay.
So it's like, I'm excited about it, but I'm also a little bit uncertain.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
100%.
So, yeah. And the thing is, like, both of these changes in my life are sort of looming, but neither of them have taken effect yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just still kind of in the same thing, but I'm just anticipating a big change in my life in, like, the next couple of weeks or so.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see what it's like. I'll report back next time.
Essentially a new home and a new job at the same time.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I could hate it, but I think I'm gonna love it. We'll see.
Do you deal with change well?
I feel like I had to have been asked that question before, but I feel like I've never answered it. I don't know. Like, I want to say good change, yes. Bad change, no. Like if I were to get fired, I don't know how I would deal with that. I don't know how I would deal with that change.
Right.
I think generally I do, but I'm a bit of a sentimental person.
Do you think you've...
And so, yeah, like generally I take change well, but I'm a bit of a sentimental person. And so like if someone, like I take breakups kind of hard, and also like friends leaving to a new state or something. It's like, I don't really like that change all the time, but it's more that I don't like the initial sting of that change. Like a breakup can be actually the best thing for me, but
oh yeah.
So it just hurts.
I guess. Dude, sometimes the end of a relationship can really propel you. It like wakes you up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the most relieving, I think the most relieved I felt was after a breakup.
Mm. Relief is really common in the grief process, and it often brings up a lot of guilt for people. But I talk about this in the documentary about Nightmare in Your Arms that we're making, how like it stung really bad, and like, I mean, stung is the wrong word, like it crushed me when my dad died.
Mm-hmm.
And then not that long after, I was filled with relief. And it took a long time to, like, deal with that and be like, fuck, what does it say about me that I feel relieved that somebody died? And not just somebody, but, like, somebody I'm really close to, you know? It was wild. So, but, I mean, that's just natural. That's just how, there's just a lot of things you don't have to deal with anymore when you get out of a relationship or when somebody passes, you know? And it's like, I think it's important to acknowledge that and...
Dude, that's such a crazy thought. I might have missed it. Did you talk about that feeling on Nightmare in Your Arms at all?
Not really. You know,
okay.
Nightmare in Your Arms was obviously dedicated to my dad, and I talked about my family and I talked about his loss. But I didn't actually ever dive. I've never dived very deep into what it was like to lose him. I mean, the closest I got to that was that song Steven off of Lakewood Boulevard.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But I, like, everything around my dad was so confusing for so long that, like, what I ended up writing was just really confusing songs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Bad Dream Weekend, you know, where it's like, are you stressed out? I didn't mean to exist. You know, are you left out? I'll bury my anger within. But yeah, I mean, I haven't talked about that thing, you know. I didn't know how, I think, when I was writing that album. I didn't know how.
I don't know if... I feel like we must have talked about this before, but sometimes... And this is especially true for me, where I'll... Especially true for me because a lot of my lyrics are so, like, stream of consciousness. Like, I'll just sometimes, like, mumble random syllables mm-hmm. while I'm writing something. And then I'll go, oh, that kind of sounds like this, or this will be a cool rhyme scheme or something. And then there's, like, a process of refination. Like, I sort of do a little bit more crafting at a certain point. And then I just sort of let it be a song without trying too hard to make it coherent. And then there's this process that usually happens where I listen back and I go, this is like a real feeling that I had that I didn't know how to express. You know what I mean?
A real feeling, is that what you said?
Yeah, like this is something
you couldn't have written unless you did it that way. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's not only something I couldn't have written, but something that I felt that I didn't know I felt, or I couldn't articulate the feeling.
Dude, you know? This is why we're friends. Because that is such a, like, complex idea. I'm not like, wow, we're so smart. But I'm just saying, like, that is such a specific feeling that I can relate to so much. And that's my favorite part about songwriting. Like, I always tell people, like, I've never sat down and just been like, I should write a song about my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Right.
Like, I've never thought about what I'm going to write about before I write the song. And it's always songs like Zachary Sun or Alcatraz or Thank You, Anne that help me figure out what I'm actually feeling. Like, and it's so powerful that way. And it never starts, it always feels totally aimless and like you're in the wilderness for a while when you start a song and you're like, what do these words mean? And then you get to the end and you're like, I learned about Ashton today. Wow. It's an amazing thing. That's what music is for.
It's
That's
a trip,
what creativity is for.
Hmm.
It's like a way, it's self-expression and everybody says that, but it's the ability to explore yourself, you know, and learn more about what's going on. Because when I wrote Alcatraz, I remember having a distinct feeling of like, I finished the chorus and I sat back and I was like, fuck, I really feel like this. And I wouldn't have been able to learn that or know that had I not just sat down.
What's the Alcatraz chorus again?
It's, I can't love you like you want. No, I can't give you what you want right now. I'm in a prison cell breaking down all the walls that I built around my heart. And it's like, and then the next stanza is, I can't love you like you need anyhow. And it's just, when I finished the chorus, it was just me acknowledging, like, there's nothing I could actually give anybody right now because I'm way too fucking broken. Like,
right.
I haven't even showed up for myself yet. I'm still stuck. Like, how am I supposed to, like, give someone love? Like, of course this doesn't feel right. You know, I was in these relationships and they didn't feel right. Like, I'm not supposed to be here, you know? So, it was really interesting.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a tough one. Did you, you sent me one a while ago, it was about 3 months ago, and it wasn't Alcatraz, but it had a similar message. It was kind of like, I remember it was really pretty. I think it was like a demo or something, and it was just like, I'm gonna hurt you was kind of the main.
Oh, breaking down.
Fuck, I wish I remembered more. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's breaking down. Yeah, it's off of of that little Bandcamp project I put out.
Can you hear me now? Hold on. Say something.
Hi.
Yeah, the Zoom's getting all clunky again.
Yeah. I can make out what you're saying. This is why it's good that we're recording the logic, because Zoom can suck my butthole.
Yeah. Zoom can suck my butt.
Do you want to try to FaceTime me really quick? Have you charged your phone?
Yeah, my phone's pretty charged up.
Let's do that.
You'll switch over?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, give me a call.
Give me a call. Hold on. Let's see here.
Whoa.
You're so stupid. Hold on, now I gotta put my headphones in so that the people don't hear your voice through my phone. Hold on one sec, Poppy.
Is this too much?
What's up?
Is this too much? I mean, look at this, you know?
Is that trail mix?
This is insane amount of trail mix.
That's a lot of trail mix.
Yeah. And the worst part is it's probably gonna take me like 3 days to eat this.
Yeah.
And it's like 28 servings in the container. Yeah.
Okay. We have switched from Zoom to FaceTime.
Let me put my earbuds in my phone instead.
If anyone is listening to this podcast and still hasn't stopped listening, they deserve a lot of brownie points.
Yep, we love you.
We love you.
These are growing pains.
We
gotta just.
We're figuring it out. Anyway,
it's snowing. It's snowing today for the first time in a while over here.
Oh yeah.
Can you see it?
Let's see. Dude, that looks magical. It snowed in Colorado when I was there, and it was so gorgeous, dude. I just could not get over it.
Yeah, that's how I felt when I got here. I don't know. Like, most Chicagoans who I talk to are just like, fuck this. I hate the snow. I wish it would stay summertime forever. But for me, I'm fucking with it.
Right, yeah.
Still.
That's what's up.
But yeah, I spent the night over at Lizzie's, and then I just walked. It's kind of a far walk to the train.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a real nice snowy walk. When it's snowy out, I like to listen to kind of like super grungy, like sort of darker, guitar-heavy songs. Like, are you familiar with the band Unwound?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay, they're kind of like a, like old Seattle grunge.
Oh, nice.
90s kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It was just real, real gorgeous time.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I did a lot of snowy walks in Colorado, and it was so like quiet out and. They have deer that just walk around everywhere. Like,
hot.
And they're so used to, like, human life that they're not, like, skittish. Like, you can get really close to them and they don't freak out.
Yeah.
So I had this peaceful, snowy, beautiful relaxation time. And then I got home and I get off BART at Civic Center. And I walk up, and I just feel like I'm in a third world fucking country, dude. It was crazy whiplash. I was like, yep, this is where I live.
Yeah.
It's bad down there, dude. I didn't realize how bad it was at Civic Center, but it's like, it's a whole fucking thing. It's crazy.
Wait, so you went to Colorado, and Okay, did you stay at your friend's house?
Yeah.
Like, was it a home recording? Okay.
Yeah.
What's her house like? Is it like in suburbia or in the city or like?
Yeah, it's suburban but really quiet, and like it doesn't okay. feel like track housey. Nice. Yeah, their house is super cozy. They have two dogs. It's amazing, dude. They told me what their mortgage was, and it's like what I pay for rent here.
Oh, see, and
I was like, fuck. I don't think. I don't think you could get that deal right now with the market where it is, but when they bought was really smart. And yeah, so it was nice.
Yeah, it's just about getting a sizable down payment together.
Right.
And then paying a mortgage is just like paying a rent.
Totally.
I'm not ready to make the switch yet, but I want to at some point.
Yeah.
In the next 5 years.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was definitely like a way of living that I could never see myself being able to accomplish. Like, they have their dogs and they're married and they have their home and they have their jobs and their cars. And I just was like when I got home, I just remember feeling an intense feeling of gratitude for my life here in the city. And, like, even this morning I woke up and I step outside and it's gorgeous here, like, super clear blue sky, and it's cold.
Nice.
And I, you know, walk down the street to the coffee shop. I see, like, three or four people that I know and, like, just people that work around here that I know now. And got my coffee. They already started making it when I walked in the door. And
ooh, got it like that.
Yeah, and then, like, I walk back, and I'm, like, about to record a podcast with Quinn, and I'm just thinking, like, even though my mind doesn't feel very good right now, like, my head is not, I'm not, like, in the best place, I'm so fucking happy that my life is what it is, and it doesn't, like, I don't give a fuck how other people live their lives. You know, it's not like a statement about like, oh, I could never do like the get married, buy a house thing. Like
picket fence thing.
Yeah. I think that's beautiful. You know, I think that's amazing. I just feel like I'm going to have this apartment for as long as I can have it, no matter where I move. Mm. Like if I move somewhere else, I'm going to try to hang on to this. And I just love
wait,
my
sorry,
space.
Hang on to that particular apartment
yeah,
or hang on
yeah.
to
hang
the
on.
Style of.
No, hang on okay. to this apartment. Like, I do not ever want to give this up.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I love it so much. And, like, it's my safe haven. And I could yeah. never see myself, like, living with someone. And if I did, I would still want to have this place that I could retreat to. It's like...
Dude.
I'm just very... I don't know how I turn... Because when I was growing up, I was so, like, you know, Christian and extroverted and sweet. And I'm literally, like, an introvert in a lot of ways. Or not introvert, but just, like, I really value my space and my time. And I go at one speed. And, like, I get really exhausted in other people's presence really fast.
Likewise.
So it's, like...
Usually, I'll say.
Yeah. So I love, you know, I love my life how it is. And to each their own. Dude, it reminds me... Is it okay if I rant really quick?
Yeah, please.
The head chef at the restaurant I work at, he and I had this hilarious conversation yesterday. And it wasn't like ha-ha funny. It was hilarious because we covered so much ground and it was so in-depth. It was like a spiritual experience and it was 5 minutes.
Wow.
And it just felt like we had like a real... understanding between one another. And so there's this gentleman who comes to the restaurant every week, and he brings his sponge and his bucket and he washes our windows. Mm-hmm. And he lives, you know, according to him, he lives in a trailer and he has a very modest lifestyle, and he keeps all his stuff in a plastic grocery bag. And, you know, so Chef Tony loves hiring him and he loves talking to him. So he's talking to this guy who's washing our windows, and the guy's just telling him about, you know, where he grew up and his life and stuff. And Chef told me that the window washer said that, like, his father said he would never amount to anything. So he went out and he bought a sponge and a bucket and he built a life for himself.
Whoa.
And it was, like, really profound. And I was telling him, I was like, you know, well, number one, I really admired Chef's, like, ability to, like, empathize with other people, because we are, like, a pretty well-known restaurant, and he's very good at what he does, and he's worked for, like, some of the top restaurants in the city, and he just could not be more humble and sweet, which is really rare. So I loved that. But the other thing was, like, it reminded me of a conversation I had with my mother the other day. And she's, like, all worried about my little sister who's 17. And my little sister is, like, the family feels like she's lost. And she doesn't know what she wants to do for college. And she doesn't know how to move forward with her life. And my mom is, like, really trying to control the situation and, like, put pressure on my sister. And I told my mom, I was, like, you actually don't have to do anything. You know why? And she was, like, why? And I was, like, because nothing matters. And so I was telling Chef during that conversation, I was like, what I was trying to explain to my mother is that that window washer, his life is just as valuable and beautiful as somebody who's like a philanthropic millionaire.
Right.
You know? And Chef was like, he looked at me and he goes, that's exactly it. Like, there actually is nothing to accomplish. It's just living. Like, there's no right way to do it, you know? And he said about my little sister, he was like, she'll figure it out. It'll just take, he was like, I didn't figure it out until I was like 28, and I still don't have it figured out. So I'm like trying to explain this to my mom, and my mom just like, sometimes she lacks the capacity to understand concepts like that because she was raised so differently, you know? But anyways, I don't know if you want to speak to any of that.
I mean, there's something that kind of stuck out to me, which was, I mean, it's a pretty big idea, and I'm not sure if I completely agree with it. And I'm not even sure, because you might mean something different from what I'm thinking. But when you said that there's no right or wrong way to live, I disagree, like, on a particular level.
Which is?
Well, like, okay, are you familiar with the moral landscape?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that I agree with what I think is the premise of that book, that there are right and wrong, that there is such a thing as a right and wrong. Not only in regards to morality, but like
how
one can maximize positivity or pleasure or well-being in their life and minimize suffering. And I don't think that necessarily always aligns with like, I don't know, having a college education or having a lot of money or not having a lot of money. I think that those can be factors. I just think that there is a right and wrong way to do things, even if I don't know what it is. I think that there is that those things are real material concepts.
Yeah.
They're not material. I can't think of the word.
Well, there's definitely, the way I think about right and wrong, especially like in terms of thinkers like Sam Harris, is like, there are things that are best for the whole of humanity, and there are things that are not, you know?
Yeah.
Like, genocide is clearly not a forward-thinking, how do you say? It does not move our species forward. Not a very
progressive, yeah.
Right. But I think of... How do I explain this?
Are you saying you think of individual well-being differently from, like, a collective well-being?
Yes.
In some fundamental way?
Yeah, I think of individual well-being, and I do believe it's very connected to the collective well-being of communities and then, you know, larger geographic populations as well. But, like, I think that well-being has everything to do with your mind and your heart and your spirit. Mm. And nothing to do with external circumstances and material possessions or the way that you live. Like, I think,
right.
I think that, like, everybody plays a part. And I also wonder if there is a contradiction between Sam Harris's view of morality and his view of, oh shit. For the listener, that is actually how I sneeze. Fuck you if you get offended.
That was the cutest sneeze I've ever heard.
I wonder if there's a contradiction between Sam Harris's view of morality and his view of free will. Because if you don't believe in free will and you believe that everything is cause and effect, then there is no right or wrong. There just is what it is. Like, I just don't see how those two concepts work together, but I also haven't written books about that, and I also haven't even read the moral landscape. I just know about it and
yeah,
what have you. But I'm just saying, like, to me... There is no life. All life has equal value. And I think because we're conscious creatures and because we sort of, like, own the earth now, maybe we have more value in that way. But everything...
Oh, like you're saying human beings have more value than, like, an ant.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I would agree. I would actually agree with that, yeah.
But... outside of that, like, I just believe that, like, everything is exactly as it's supposed to be, and there are so many causes and effects and variables and so many different lifestyles and ways that the world, you know, that the world goes in circles, and, like, I just don't... I think everybody is doing the best they can. Like, I just don't think right. that, like... I just don't believe in judgment. Like, I really don't. I think that, like, people that are quick to point the finger at how somebody else is living are the people who are the most hurt. And I think the happiest people on Earth are people that have... mastered the ability to be present and practice gratitude and humility. And, like, I don't know. I just, what do you think Sam Harris would say to all that?
Well, I think one of the first conversations I can remember us having, probably like 3 or 4 years ago, was one where you actually said something pretty similar, but it was specifically in regards to music. I think I'm someone who likes to ask a lot of, like, weird hypotheticals and kind of, like, maybe at times invasive questions.
Right.
And I think I asked you, like, what music do you hate? Like, what music can you not stand? And you gave an answer sort of like, it's unbecoming to hate anything, to hate any sort of music, you know, like, the best musicians are the ones who just, you know, find value in anything.
I said that?
Something. That's what my memory...
Wow.
...is putting to me at the moment. Does that sound like you, to you?
Well...
I might have got it wrong.
No, it sounds like a funny thing for me to say at that time, because I was literally the most insecure, judgmental little bitch around. So it's just funny. But
yeah, well, it was something like that. And I mean, I think, let's see. And we, I think we've sort of talked about this a few times, about judgment in particular. And I'm so torn about it, you know, because what you're saying, I think, is sort of idyllic for me. I strive to be present and to rather than judge in any given moment, whether I'm judging someone to be above or below me in stature, I'd rather strive or seek to understand. But the part that let's see, gives me some discord around that thought is two things. One, that it seems to be my an intuition of sorts, or an instinct for me to judge people. I don't think I'm the most judgmental person around, but I can't help but judge sometimes. Especially when someone's doing something that I think is like evil or like ignorant or rude or something.
Mm-hmm.
I judge people like that harshly. And then also I think that there's there's like palpable, identifiable benefits and innovations that certain people have brought this world. And then you're, like you said, there's things that, like genocide, that were brought about by certain people who, and I think that you can,
yeah.
All I'm saying is that you can, there are, if we consider well-being and suffering and things like that as goalposts, you can draw a huge distinction between the effect of one person's life over the effect of another person's life, and what it means for not only the benefit of that person, but of the collective.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. What I'm saying is that no one person causes anything to happen. I'm saying that, like, people who have caused major dysfunction and who have done things that have affected millions of people, they didn't choose to be that person. And I don't think, you know...
Right, you don't think that determinism having, like, an objective morality where you judge people, but those two things don't... what's the word? They don't mesh, or they don't, like...
They don't work together.
They can't coexist.
Yeah.
They don't work together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, like, you know, we praise individuals, but those individuals are products of all of their experiences and relationships.
Right.
And they didn't choose anything. They just, like, made all these very specific and... they made all these decisions, and we think that we're making the decision, but we're not. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's, to me, it's like so clearly like a game of cause and effect. And so I understand what you're saying, but I think that overall, the good and the bad, you know, quotes over those words, like, work together to move us forward. And
yeah. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just don't think, like, we have that kind of free will or independence from our experiences. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I agree. But what do you think, like, wouldn't our world be so different if we didn't praise that thing, that collection of experiences.
Yeah, and even
influences.
Yeah, and even
or
that.
Or blame the bad ones, what we deem as bad ones.
Right. Even that is part of it.
Right.
I'm saying, like, it can all be true, and it's all valid. And I know how people would hear that and be like, what about Hitler? It's like, relax. Like, just think about what I'm saying instead of, like, judging what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really think about it. Like, we have come a long way, you know, as far as things like injustices, as far as, like, you know, within the realm of, like, sex or race. Like, we've come a long way, but we couldn't have come a long way if we didn't first have the problem.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Hitler is a very identifiable, like, icon in a way that we can point to say, let's not do that.
Right. Yeah, 100%. And it's like, and also the ideology and the dogmatic thinking that he held, like, we see that in other people. Like,
right.
There are public figures now who have really dangerous ways of thinking that are like, wow, that is very, we've seen this before. I'm saying, like, the whole story works together to continue to move us forward. And mm-hmm. I don't think that this idea is totally fleshed out. And I don't even think I'm right. It's just the only way that I've been able to make sense of the good and the bad in the world is that it all belongs. For instance, like,
yeah.
I didn't write Nightmare in Your Arms. My experiences and my relationships wrote it.
That's such a tough concept for me to, like, understand. And it's one that Sam Harris is a proponent of. That essentially there is no such thing as, like, the self.
Right. Our ego hates hearing that, dude.
Yeah, I mean, not only my ego, I just can't conceive of it on any level. And it's tough for me because I, like, I've agreed with him on so many different points. And I'm also, it's sort of a central tenet of certain styles of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And I just haven't been able to, like, wrap my head around it.
How come?
Because my conscious experience seems so clearly centered behind my eyes and inside my body. I can't, I can sort of relate to phenomena that happens outside, you know, the cold from the snow, and I know that everything about what I'm doing right now is some effect of what's around me and my past and everything. But that conscious experience is also so clearly centered in my body.
Hmm.
You know, and that's just what it just makes sense to call that thing an I, or to call it Quinn or whatever, you know?
Right.
If we're going to identify things.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. So your qualm is just with that idea that there's no such thing as a self, but it's not really with, but you do agree that, like, cause and effect is basically why things happen.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I am a determinist.
Right. So you don't absolutely believe in free will, but you have a hard time with the sense of self thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I'm a determinist. I also believe in, like, an objective morality to some degree, but yeah, I just think, I can sort of try to understand what that phrase, there is no self, is trying to drive at. But to me, there just seems to be, from my conscious experience, I seem to be clearly experiencing things from an individual point of view.
Right. Yeah, and you're like, what is that? It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think something that might help break this open really quick, and then I should probably go in like 5 or 10 minutes, but
sure.
I think something that might help break this open is when I was in Colorado, one of my friends asked the group, he said, how would you guys define or characterize the ego? And our answers were so interesting. And I think at the end, we all kind of agreed that the ego is the part of you that wants to separate from the collective whole, or the part of you that feels the need to think of yourself as the center of the universe instead of just a part of the universe. Mm. It's this need to feel separate than the whole. And I just actually believe that, like, the reason I think the ego plays a really important role in our lives, but I think the reason it can be so hard for us to, like, how do I say this? I was going somewhere with that thought, and then I got distracted by my headphones. I was fixing them. But anyways, I just wonder, I feel like maybe what you're getting at has to do more with the ego, because I think that is where our sense of self lies. It's the story we tell ourselves about who we are and what our purpose is. But the reality is we're all a part of it. And
yeah.
We're made up of all the same shit that everything else is. Like,
yeah, I mean, like you've said it in regards to something else, I think all of it is true. You know, like, I think that we are a part of everything, but there's also obviously something very distinguishable that separates you from me, right?
Right. And you think that that's more than your experiences?
No. Nuh-uh. I mean, I think that whatever you are and whatever I am is a result of, like, us experiencing different things.
The way I think about this is, like, if you lived my life and I lived yours, you would be me and I would be you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, if my parents gave birth to you instead, and then you lived my complete life, you would be me.
Right.
For sure. Like, 100%. There's nothing... I don't believe in any sort of, like, soul, even.
Right.
Like, I don't think that there's anything separate. I don't think that there's anything about me that falls outside of genetics and experience.
So if you can acknowledge that, then what is the issue with the sense of self thing?
It's just that I think that my genetics and my experiences have made me have produced a self, a person, an individual. I just think that's the cleanest way to talk about it or conceptualize it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I understand.
Human beings.
Well, we are all unique.
Yeah. Yeah, and like everything's a part of everything, but they're also different things. I think both are true, but I don't know. It really just depends on which perspective you want to look at it from, and how you feel like is what you feel like is the most effective way to talk about things. But it's just like, yes, my charger and my laptop are part of the same system. They're producing kind of the same outcome in a way,
mm-hmm.
but they're separate pieces.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, 100%. I'm not saying that you're not Quinn. I'm saying that the illusion that you are anything other than the amalgamation of your experiences mm-hmm. is
false. I'm not under that illusion.
Right, okay.
I think we agree there.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, I didn't realize. That's interesting, but... And also, like,
yeah,
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's weird. There's so much, like, about this conversation, and I think all of it really relates. Like, the free will discussion really relates to the self discussion, and I think it might be cleaner for me philosophically if I also said that there is no, that the self is a complete illusion. But I just don't. I think there's a very, yeah, the language here gets really confusing. I just think that for me, there's a very clear experience of being different than everything else while still being completely a part of it.
Right.
Like, that's how I feel every waking moment.
So say that one more time, slowly.
Yeah, I feel, I remember exactly what I said, but I feel distinguishable and distinct from everything else in the world, but I still feel completely a part of it. Like, I couldn't exist
right
the way I am without everything else.
Yeah.
But yet still, I feel like you can distinguish me from everything else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, 100%. Like, I couldn't agree with that more. And I think that's probably a good place to leave that, you know? That's 100% true. There is this one thing that Pete Holmes said that I am hearing right now in my head, like, over and over, which is, like, the sense of self is almost like... And he also doesn't say the sense of self part, but I'm relating it to what it's whatever. He says, I will tell you who you think you are if you tell me who I think I am.
Mm.
And that is what we're all doing every day. If you treat me like I'm a songwriting artist who lives in San Francisco and is, you know, young and free and progressive and blah, blah,
and
blah,
hot.
And hot and amazing and perfect. I'm just kidding. Then I will treat you like you're a successful businessman who works in FIDI. But all of those things are, like, not who we are. They're just who we want to believe we are. But we're all just, like, little mammals. We're all just monkeys, like, trying to figure it out, taking social cues and making a lot of mistakes and fighting for survival and needing affirmation and love and lying and cheating and stealing and loving and fucking. And that, you know, it's like, right. To me, it's like, we're all just monkeys and the mask we put on every day. Another thing Pete Holmes said that I thought was amazing was, like, heaven is when the show is over and you go backstage and you all take your masks off and laugh.
Mm. Dude, that's heavy.
Isn't that crazy? Like, that's what heaven is. Anyways, seeing you for who you are as a part of this thing rather than who you are as separate from me.
Mm.
Seeing our commonalities and what you bring to the table, but I don't know. It's big. It's hard to think about this stuff, dude. Like,
it is.
It takes
hard
time
to talk about too.
Yeah,
obviously
it takes time. Yeah. But I do think this was valuable, and I hope somebody out there is like, oh my god, I've been looking for that language, you know.
Right.
So okay. So,
wow.
What do you want to end with? Should we do like a short little question thing, like? Something.
What do you mean?
Like a fun little finale, like.
Okay.
Maybe.
What color are you wearing? Boxers.
Oh, my underwear today. Can I look? Or do I have to remember?
First, give me your guess.
My what?
First, give me your guess.
I just realized I'm not even wearing underwear.
Whoa, dude. Ew! What kind of pants are you wearing?
I'm wearing really, really comfortable pajamas.
Okay, that's fine.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm wearing pajamas as well, but I've also got undies underneath
because
I need the warmth. It's cold right now.
What color, Quinn?
Gray.
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 Okay, my turn. What is the thing you're telling yourself will make you happier than you are right now? Like, what is the thing you're saying, like, I need that thing to work out or I won't be happy?
It's both of those things I was talking about earlier. Like, that new apartment that I'm not in right now,
mm-hmm.
I think I'll be happier in it.
Right.
And then more money, yeah. And, you know what? Both are wrong.
Right.
But, you know, it's hard to remember that sometimes.
It is. Know? That has nothing to do with your happiness, but it feels so tied to it. Or not happiness, but just contentment. But, yeah, because the new house is going to come with new problems.
Right.
And the new job is going to come with new problems. The thing I'm telling myself is, if I can really move forward in music this year and get higher numbers and more fans and more listeners, I'll be happy. And
do you think that's wrong?
I think it's wrong to give that too much weight, but I think it's right to give it a little bit of, you know, validity, because I want to move forward, but I also know that, like, you know, with any sort of success in music, there's going to be problems and there's going to be touring and more people involved and more money going around. And
yeah,
it's a whole thing. But, like, I want it so bad for some reason. And at the same time, I know that I have everything I need today.
That's exactly how I feel with really anything. Like, I really do overall feel completely content where I am.
Right.
Like, I can wake up every day and be grateful, you know? But there's just certain things that I want.
Yeah. It's almost like life is about the chase or the lack that we feel.
Right.
You know,
is it wrong to think that way though?
I think it's wrong to not be aware of it.
Hmm.
Gina and I talked a lot about that in Colorado. Like, whatever you're feeling, however you're living, whatever you're doing is totally valid and welcome as long as you're not deceiving yourself about what's actually going on. For me, like, what's actually going on is, like, I am filling a void by being an artist, because it is about the creativity and the self-expression and the self-exploration. But it's also, like, I'm pretty aware that my ego really needs a lot of, like, affirmation and attention, and I need to feel seen, because as a kid I did not feel that way. But I'm aware of that, and I know that that's a little game I play with myself, where it's like, some days I give that part of myself a lot of, you know, a big voice, and some days I have to rein it in a little bit. But I just think everything is valid as long as you can be honest with yourself. Mm. Like you are. Like, there's a part of me that feels like I'll be happier if I get this job and this apartment. And then there's a part of me that knows that that's bullshit. To me, that's honest.
Right. I mean, one illusion that I'm not under is that there will ever reach a point where I'm completely content for the rest of my life, you know?
Right.
I can never say for sure, but I don't think, like, once I get this, the chase is over.
Right.
I'm good.
I think the bad part is that most people live that way and think that way.
Right. And I used to, for sure.
Right.
I used to think, like, once I get Pokemon Silver, I can just play that.
Right, exactly.
Forever. Once I get this new guitar, I'm set.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not the case. I had one more thought, but I think we ought to save it for next time.
No,
it's
no.
It's like a whole another.
Is it?
It's like a whole another thing.
Should we treat it like a trailer then? I want to know what it is. I hate when people leave me on the...
You know, I have something really important that I want to express, but never mind.
Fucking hate you.
That's actually my biggest pet peeve.
Yeah, mine
or
too.
Or when someone says, hey, can I ask you something? And I'm like, yeah, shoot. And they're like, never mind. Like, okay.
Oh, you know? My God. That's always really fear. Doing. Dude, we lost a server at the restaurant to what we think is suicide a couple months ago. And it was really tragic because we all loved her so much. And the last conversation I had with her was she said, can I ask you something after work? And I said, sure. And then I approached her after work and she said, I don't feel comfortable asking anymore. And then she was gone, dude. It was crazy.
Wow.
It was so crazy. So if you feel like you need to be heard and you're afraid someone's going to judge you, like, just, I'm saying this to the listener, like, say what you need to say to people. Like,
agreed.
You do not have to keep that shit in. But anyways, what were you going to say?
And I mean, we all fall short on that. I certainly do. It takes courage. But, you know, it's just like an active pursuit. For me, anyways. Like, I try... Like, for me, honesty is not a trait of mine. It's like a pursuit. It's like a thing that I work at. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have to constantly remind myself to do it.
That's so true. That's so well said.
And I already forgot what I was going to say.
No! Fuck me. Really?
What were we talking about?
I totally stole the show. I'm sorry. I really wanted to hear it.
Yeah. It's all right. I'll remember it for next time.
Are you sure?
I don't... You know, it was going to get kind of like heady philosophical, maybe. That's why I was a bit hesitant. Because it was another sort of like... Harrisian sort of thing.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. But we got time.
Okay. Well, I think my new catchphrase at the end of this podcast should be what I have always said in real life to everybody, which is, don't forget who you are, where you came from, and how special you are.
I love that one.
You've heard me say that, right?
Yeah, just on the phone. It's like it's your catchphrase.
It's my catchphrase. It always has been. Yeah.
You know mine.
What's yours?
Blessings and curses.
Stolen from Zach.
Yes, sir.
That's hilarious.
Oh, I was stealing it from you. Okay.
Yeah, I stole Thank it you, from Zach. Him. He says blessings and curses.
Love it.
So wholesome. Okay.